Okay, since we're live, hey guys, it is Tamara Lanann, and it is Touch Base Tuesday. Thank you guys, and the Starving Dog Action Pack. I'm usually wearing my Touch Base Tuesday shirt. Today we got the Put Your Action Where Your Hashtag shirt is because we have the king of action on the show today, Mr. Steve D. Sims. And thank you for coming on the show, my friend.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. Sorry I was a bit late.
Oh, no worries, no worries. The show really is never late. I frustrated someone the other day who asked me when my show was, and I said on Tuesday, and they said, well, what time on Tuesday? I said, before Wednesday. Because we never go live. There's no structure in my life at all. So we do it usually around the guests. The reason we don't have a set time is Touch Base Tuesday, for those tuning in for the first time, is about life is hectic. It's easy to make excuses. It's easy to get busy, but you do need to stop and go, okay, did I check in? You know, how's my spirit today? Have I talked to my kids? You know, and really touching base with what's going on around you. I think in a 24-hour society where people have never been as accessible as they are now, right? 24 hours, you can get anybody around the world. I also believe this is the most disconnected human beings have been to each other. And so we like to tell folks, you know, Touch Base Tuesday is about, you know, keeping your environment good for you. And so again, thank you for coming on the show. And for those of you who haven't looked up Steve Sims yet, even though I've been telling you to all week, he has his book, The Blue Fishin, The Art of Making Things Happen. And so I'm just going to turn the floor over to you, Steve, and talk a little bit to our entrepreneurs about, you know, how you got to the point where you kind of figured out that persistence, was your superpower in getting these things done for various clients.
Yeah, I'm not sure I ever discovered it. I think it was just one of those things that I discovered the time when people didn't have it, and then I suddenly went, oh, well, that's weird. I'm Irish lad from East London, born and raised in a Brick Lane family. As an Irish lad living in London, it's one of these things where you want something and you go and ask for it, and you see what you can negotiate. And if you can't afford it, maybe you give him this amount of money and wash his car for a bit. You know, we were the hustlers of the 80s. And then as I grew up, I just started getting involved in things. And I was this irritating, nosy little Irish lad that just wanted, I want to go into that club, but you're not old enough. And that's an obstacle. Let's look past that, see how I've got to make it happen. So I was that kind of a annoying little barrow boy that could talk my way into anywhere. And then I started doing it for money. You know, I would get people into things purely and simply because I wanted to build a relationship with them, never giving anything away for free. If you give it away for free, that's its value. So I would always charge people to get into things. And then before I realized, I started looking around and I noticed people don't like to ask to do things. They don't like to ask for access, not because they're shy of that, but the more visual we are as a world now with Instagram, social, anything, you know, even American as funny as videos, we've got videos on us all the time, 24/7. And I think people nowadays, they're not frightened of trying something. They're frightened of people seeing them fail and being laughed at. And so as I grew up and I was getting people into parties, it started off just being clubs, bars, parties, red carpet events, worldwide social events. As it grew and grew and grew, I was just, I suppose, mortified while people were so stuck with this rejection. And I was the kid that would go along and go, hey, we need to make this happen. So how do we make it happen? And I would get people into things and they'd be like, oh, I can't believe you did that. And I'd be like, oh, I can't believe you didn't bloody ask yourself. But I made money out of it. I made a business out of it. And I became the guy that could. So the more I got people in, the more of a track record I got, the more credibility I got, the easier. And it's always easy after you've been doing it for 20 years. But the easier it was for me to get these things from going down to the Titanic or opening up the Vatican or getting serenaded by Andrea Bocelli while you're eating pasta. But it started off just getting you into a nightclub or getting you into a restaurant that was sold out or getting you backstage at a concert. It started off with the small stuff that gradually built up and up and up and up and up to where it is now.
Awesome. Now, you said something that clicked with me and resonated with me when you said, you know, don't give things away for free because then that's its value. Mm-hmm. So as you know, in the entrepreneur world right now, every generation has some sort of, like, you know, right now everybody's trying to 10X their business, or the word authentic is the key word, right? Or what, last year, I think people were hacking into shit, whatever they're doing. But right now the popular buzz is service to success. Go serve someone and that will, you know, come back to your business. But can you explain to folks though, the difference between giving someone value and some of these poor folks who are going up to people, working for free for a very long time, and then it not turning into a business relationship. And they don't understand that giving value and working for free are two different things. How would you go about explaining giving value in a way that would, you know, turn into a good relationship?
So first of all, I'm going to talk to you about the art of being selfish. And there's a lot of people now that, and I've done this, I speak on stages and I consult and I walk up to someone and I go, hey, Tamara, are you selfish? Do you believe you're selfish? And straight away, people will be like, oh, no, I'm not selfish. I'm not a selfish person. No. And it's all negative. And it's negative because as we've grown up, you know, our parents, our friends have turned around and gone, hey, pass the sweets. Don't be selfish. Hey, pass the remote control. You're being selfish with it. You know, don't hog all of that. You're being selfish. Well, when was the last time you got on a plane and the plane's just about to take off and the steward or stewardess stands there and says, look, here's the exits, you know, all that kind of stuff. And in the case of an emergency, an oxygen mask is going to fall out from the ceiling. When was the last time you heard them say, and put that on someone else first before you look after yourself? They've never said that. They've never said that.
Never.
People are doing it that way now in business. You've got to be selfish. You've got to know what's in it for me. Okay. Where's my benefit? Now, if you're working for someone for 6 months for no money, okay, you know full well the benefit is not financial. But is the benefit connectivity? Is the benefit the potential? Is the benefit? You've got to go, is it worth it? Now, if this is just someone saying, hey, yeah, you want to, you know, not maybe working for the boss, maybe you're working for an assistant of an assistant of an assistant of an assistant, and you've got to turn around to yourself and go, well, hang on a minute. Is that person connected enough that there's going to be any relationship built with me? Am I just going to be shielded so far away from it that no one's ever going to know that it was my work being done here? You've got to be selfish. Everything I do, I'm selfish. I am the biggest self-centered son of a bitch you'll ever meet in your life because I ask myself on everything I do, what's the point? Now, if it makes me smile and happy, there's a point. If it makes me feel good, there's a point. But if there's nil gain in it from me, that's the first thing, I ain't doing it. Then you've got to consider, okay, the person I'm dealing with is a selfish, self-centered son of a bitch. What's in it for them that's going to make it so irresistible that they never want me to leave? And that's where you start focusing on what you do, whether or not it's true, irreplaceable value. Now, if you can walk into, like they always used to say, oh, you've got to get your foot in the door. You've just pointed out with LinkedIn and Facebook and all these kind of groups, you can get your foot in the door with absolutely anyone. That's no longer a talent. The real talent is being so irresistible that they shut the door after you and don't want you to leave. That's what you've got to focus on. That's the position. And that means you've got to bring irreplaceable value, energy, enthusiasm, attitude, anger, whatever. You've got to bring something to the relationship. So I always look at every relationship I want and I go, well, okay, I know what's in it for me. That's the first question. I know why I want to be part of this. What's going to make it so irreplaceable for you that you're going to never want me to leave? Where's my value? Is it, hang on, you are a very good company, but you're missing out on digital branding. Is it, your message isn't coming through to attract as many clients as you actually could? Is it your customer retention is pretty bad? I've got some tips on how to do it. Whatever you bring to the table, you go for, and that's when you serve, because you know what's in it for you. You want to build up a relationship. You want a potential of some business. You want a potential of having them use you as a resource, or allowing you to be able to use them as a resource for you to get other business out of it. You know what's in it for you, but you've got to make sure what's in it for them is irreplaceable. But you've got to be talking to the person in control. You've got to be talking to the person in power. If you're talking to the foot soldier of the foot soldier of the foot soldier's assistant's left door neighbor's dog, that's the wrong person you're talking to. And you're whistling in the wind. You're wasting your time.
Outstanding. Thank you. That's a good way of putting it. A lot of folks, they're mistaking, giving away their value, making the value less because they're doing it for free for a long time and not understanding. How do you determine for yourself in your business? Let's see if I can say this right. How I want to go about this. Again, they should let me do this every week. I crash the show every week, every single week. But so I'm sure they're getting real work done when I do this. Explain to folks, because I know about your chunk test, and if folks don't, we'll post the video later. How do you leverage yourself and explain to folks that just because somebody has enough money to pay you for what you do doesn't mean that they should be somebody you take money from?
Yeah, that really comes down to whether or not you're actually taking on the client or the checkbook. And I noticed that I am a great believer in zero friction. There's nothing good about friction. Friction on anything is a break. It stops you. And eventually it will crack. So friction is a bad thing in absolutely every single term you can think of. So I looked to my life, and I wanted to remove friction from it. And I found that being me, this big, ugly Irish lad, was very easy, because I just wake up in the morning, 9 times out of 10, I haven't even got to do my hair. This is as good as it gets, okay? Zero friction, zero effort, which means I can do this all day, every day. No change of pace. You usually notice people that are trying to put on a persona, trying to make out that they're more intelligent than they are. They get tired, because that's a lot of effort, to try and be someone you're not. So first of all, I decided who I was. Then I found out that making a relationship and connecting with someone, again, was easy if I understood them and they understood me. Now, if I was clear, and you mentioned the word authenticity earlier, if I was transparent about who I was, hey, this is me, I'm not the smartest tool in the shed, but I get shit done. If I was very transparent about who I was and transparent about what I want to do, hey, I know I can do this for you. I'm going to charge you money, you're going to pay, and you're going to go away with a happy cocktail story and be a happy client for the rest of your life, So if we're very transparent about what we're trying to do, then it makes the connection, again, zero effort. Now, as I was growing up in this business, and my old concierge firm deals with billionaires and zillionaires. We got clients that own things like countries. and those are our clients. I found that if I tried to become someone I wasn't, they intuitively would actually try and become someone that they weren't, to try and it's a horrible way to start a relationship. And I noticed early on in my life that I did at one stage turn around and go, oh, I wonder how much money I'm making, because I've never focused on that before. I know there's a lot of people out there going, well, I don't have a lot of money. Me, I'm crap with money. If I've got a lot of money, I get lazy. If I've got no money, I take the wrong deals. That's a bad curve to be on. So I literally went, I want nothing to do with the money. I just want my wife to go, hey, mortgage time. And then I can go, all right, I'm getting low, and I end up working on the people rather than on the checkbooks. Because when you're focusing on the checkbooks, you're not actually focusing on what the person actually wants and who they actually are. Because you never give a client what they want. Sorry, let me rephrase that. You never give a client what they ask for. You give them what they need and desire. And usually that takes a little bit of digging. Now, if you're not in that conversation, but you're in that checkbook, you're going to miss up on that kind of terminology. And what's going to end up happening is you're going to end up with 20 or 30 clients that pay you well, that you have no connection to, no understanding. And this is what gets the a-holes into your world. And if you focus on the checkbook and not on the person, you're going to end up with some very rich arseholes. And the thing is, arseholes do not get better with age. So you end up with all of that friction. And now you're dealing with people that you don't want to deal with. And now you're dealing with people that maybe don't share the same morals or the same values. And they speak rudely to the staff and they don't tip well. And all of these kind of things that irritate you, that end up starting eating away at you like some kind of business cancer. And any of the good relationships you have will suddenly start getting eaten up by the bad juju that you're passing over from the bad clients that you've got. So I learned that very on, and you mentioned my chug test. I learned that very, very early on, and I pulled back and I went, hang on, I'm making a lot of money, but I got a lot of assholes. And so I turned it around and went, I only want to deal with people I like. If I can't connect with you, I don't care how much money you got. You know, let me connect with you, and then I'll work out, can you afford me? And if you can afford me, well, two for two, we're doing okay. But I'll always lead, first of all, with, can I connect with you on a level playing field? Not your persona, not your business card, not on the, oh, yes, I need you to do this for me. You will do this for me. Now, you can go away. I'm not dealing with you if you think you're up here and I'm down here. That's not a relationship, fella. So I make sure I focus on the person, not the checkbook.
Awesome. Awesome. That is, yeah, that's a good way. I think some folks too, they get desperate. So they focus on the money instead of working with their ideal client.
But that's what we were saying. Yeah. They get desperate because of the finances. And don't get me wrong, I've been broke more times than I care to mention, more times than I can remember, because like all entrepreneurs, our life is like that. You know, it goes all over the place. I have been on my ass sitting there, not being able to sleep at night, thinking, how am I going to pay people at the weekend? I've been there, but I want to know that I'm dealing with people that I can deal with and it's not eating away at me. So it's a case of, do I lose money or do I lose soul? Do I lose credibility? Do I lose my morals? Do I lose who I am to make 10 grand? And as far as I'm concerned, whether I've been broke or rich, I am never selling these elements for a price tag.
Awesome. Now, you have had a brilliant career on kind of doing the exact opposite of what most business coaches tell their clients to do. And what that is, it's we all hear, you need a niche. Oh, you got to do something nobody else does. And there are some of us misfits who, bad things happen when we're bored, right? And I'm sure that you're the same way. How do you navigate that and see if you're someone who should have a niche or if you're someone who, you know, shouldn't put themselves, you know, in a box? So, for example, you're blue fishing and it doesn't tell anybody what you do and it opens the door for greater opportunities. How have you made that work and how did you realize that was the route you needed to go?
So I'll answer by giving you a little bit about my career. So I was a bricklayer in London at the age of 15. I left school at 15 and went straight onto the building sites. Not exactly the most challenging environment to be in, but my father was a bricklayer. So that's exactly what happened to me. No college, anything like that. And then I ended up getting a job. I ended up getting a job in Hong Kong because quite simply I lied. I told them that I knew about stockbroking. And they were training recruits to come over to Hong Kong. And so I landed there. I got drunk with them on the Saturday and Sunday, did orientation on the Monday, and I was fired on the Tuesday morning. So they realized that I had no idea what I was doing. So I started working on the door. Now, I then wanted to connect with affluent people because I wanted to be able to ask them the question, why are you rich and I'm not? You know, that was it. You know, all I wanted to do, and that's the answer. That's the quick answer, and we'll go into a bit longer. But the quick answer has always been, what's the shortest route between A and B? You're wealthy. I'm not. How can I talk to you? Now, there was a lot of rich people coming in, and sometimes the clubs I was working on weren't really the hottest clubs that night. And I would turn them away and send them down the road just to start building up value with them, that I was a reliable source for where the best clubs were. And then I started throwing my own parties. So all of this was not because I wanted to become a party promoter, not because I wanted to become the best doorman in the planet, but I wanted to be able to get your phone number in my brick-sized cell phone at the time, okay? I wanted that. That was my goal. I was single-visioned on that. And then I started to get to communicate with them and put these clubs on and throw these parties and stuff. And that was the reason for me to be able to talk to them. So it was very focused on that. And I had all these people going, oh, you have to brand, you have to market, you have to build up a persona and stuff like that. Whenever you do that, it's like trying to look left and right when you're driving down the road. You slow up, okay? The bottom line of it is when you start looking left and right or in reverse, your top speed diminishes. So I went, I'll worry about that another time. I focused on what I stood for. Now, without realizing it, and everyone should realize it now, and it's what I teach, focus on what you do. The branding, the niche market, the tone, your avatar, that will all develop out of what you do. So as I grew, I became known as this, quite bluntly, scary-looking British fella that you wouldn't want to meet in a dark alley that just happens to be able to get you married in the Vatican by the Pope.
Let alone give you a credit card, right?
Yeah. So I was that guy that started to build up this kind of quirky little brand, but it was overtaken. My looks, my lack of education, my completely appalling spelling was overtaken by my credibility of my can do. I was one of the classics, my I can is higher than my IQ. So I didn't focus on the branding. I didn't focus on the marketing. And here's one of the daft things. I was doing some big events in Monaco, and I had been spotted that I was the guy that was at all of these events. And no one knew who I was, but I seemed to be one of the players. And a breakfast TV show in London actually asked to interview me. And I was like, well, I can't speak about my clients. And they were like, oh, you're seen all over Monaco. We've got to interview you. Yeah, all right. And I was very excited. I was going to be on British breakfast TV. You know, I was very chuffed. And we had just, I think it was like 2000, 1999, something like that. We had just paid for this website to be built. And it was in the early days of website design. So it was like $30,000 and you got like three pages.
Right.
So I'm sitting there on the couch and these people are going, oh, we've seen you with, you know, Prince Albert of Monaco, and we've seen you with Arnold Schwarzenegger. And of course I'm sitting there going, I'm sorry, I can't actually talk about that. And I'm looking great. You know, I'm feeling quite proud of myself. And then the lady turns around and she says, and you are so, so bespoke. What was it? So secretive in working with the class that you do. You don't even have a phone number or an email on your website, do you? And I realized then that the 30 grand for the three pages, we didn't even have a contact page. And I'm like, and of course I'm on TV, so I'm like, that's correct. And they were like, oh, you know, you've got to know Steve or you don't know Steve. So they go off on this kind of like blowing and building this smoke up of the fact that, you know, he's so exclusive, you can't even get a hold of him. Meanwhile, I'm sitting there going, what pilchard forgot to put the contact page on there? And I got off there. I ended up shouting at one of my team going, why wasn't this done? And all of a sudden people started finding me in different routes. And there was an effort now into trying getting a hold of me. And even today, now we've changed the website. Websites aren't 30 grand anymore. But even today, we have no phone number and no email. So it actually worked in our favor. And that's what it grew. I focus on what it is I did and let the other stuff come along, you know, organically.
Awesome. So I want you to tell some folks about, because you do public speaking, but you have your speakeasy and some other places where folks can come hang out with you. And how do they find that stuff? I have your website up, stevedsims.com. But Which events do you have coming up now? I know you have one in Vegas here pretty soon, but you'll let folks know where they have the opportunity to come, you know, interact with you, because if they come to your smaller workshops, I personally like to go to workshops or events where there might be only 20 people or though there for the connection. So which one of your events coming up would be the best place for folks to come get an education, well, and meet other people and connect with you?
I think any of them. So you've got to understand how this actually came about. You know, you've got the website on there. You can sign up for the newsletter. If you do sign up, by the way, you get the video of the chug test, and you also get the downloadable free PDF cheat sheet of the book Bluefish in the Art of Making Things Happen. So there's some freebie nuggets for you there. Subscribe, get it, and then unsubscribe if you wish. But, you know, there's some little freebies for you. If you are on that list, we'll also let you know of the speakeasies. Explain what it is. Now, I've been in the luxury industry for, God, like 15, 17 years now. About 4 years ago, I started doing conferences and workshops and stages for the entrepreneurial world. And then the book came out a couple of years ago, and it's literally just shoved me up in the air with speaking and coaching gigs. But you go along to an event, and all the speakers are advertised. So you buy your ticket based on who's going to be there. Now, out of 10 speakers, two of them may resonate with you. One of them may be the draw, and the rest of them are like, hey, yeah, that's nice. You know, it's that kind of environment. So what I did was I thought to myself, I'm going to reverse engineer this. For a start, maximum of 40 people. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, okay, here you go. 2 days, $2,000 purchase here. And it's on my website under next event. And the next one's actually in November called Silicon Valley. So I move them around interesting places. And what I promise you is interesting locations that you would never be able to get into, in a room with interesting people you would normally never get to meet, hearing from expert leaders that normally you would never get to chat with. Now, when these people are on the stage, you can't get near them unless you're kind of like lurking around by the stage door or something like that. In my events, if people join, we then contact you and you go, hey, you know, thanks for joining the speakeasy. What's your problem? And we want to know, what's your issue? And they may go, well, I'm thinking of doing a book. I'm trying to do more videos on Facebook. I'm trying to launch a new website. I'm trying to get into speaking. We go, okay, great. Now, here's the funny thing. If you interview 40 people, usually you'll get about 10 of the same issues. So then what we do is we look at our, you know, friend list, and I have some pretty cool friends, and I go, hey, Johnny, I've got this problem. I need you to come along and speak and answer it. Or, you know, Julie, I need this answered. Will you come along? So we actually have speakers that you have no idea who they are, but are industry leaders, captains, icons that actually stand in front of you and go, hey, I realize that some of you had this problem. And we've had like the head of Ralph Lauren. We've had the guy that does all of Victoria's Secret's videos, the guy that did the poopery advert talking about virality on videos. We've had some, you know, we had Jim Quick because someone said, I can't remember things. We've had some of the biggest players out there. We had the man that actually was behind We Are the World. That was the first call that Michael Jackson gave when he said he wanted to do the video, wanted to do a collaborative for the charity. And he was the guy that then got Quincy Jones and put together We Are the World. So we've had some major people stand up and go, okay, this was the question poised. This is the answer. And then it will go into a presentation. And then more importantly, a Q&A. So you're actually interacting going, well, that sounds great for you, but I've got 200 followers. How do I get that to 7,000? And they go, well, take this down, do this, and we'll actually workshop you on that. So they're called speakeasies. You don't know who's going to be there. We give you a location. Like the next one actually is already sold out, is in Reno. And so we've pulled that off. So the next one's in Reno. It's a one-day event in the middle of July. So you're going to get to see the photographs of what we got up to. But people are coming to Reno with me. And I promised them two locations that you're never normally going to be walking into, talking with people you're never normally going to meet. There's going to be some pretty incredible pictures when these people realize what I've arranged for them. And that's the same for Silicon Valley. So that's what the speaky is. It's a reverse engineered workshop where we answer the problem rather than seduce you with the speaker.
That's amazing. I love that. Because I have learned the hard way, I think, and some people have as well, where, you know, they're concentrated on the speaker. They spend a bunch of money for the speaker, but the audience isn't necessarily the right fit for networking. And I've been to other workshops where the speaker wasn't very well thought of, but you're standing next to, oh my God, did I just really meet that person, right? In their audience. And so how did you start to identify how to get these type of networking folks together and not focus on the wrong thing so that people can get in front of the types of people that would do best for, you know, their businesses?
So the good thing about only having 40 people is you can actually vet the people that are coming. You know, you've got these people that are selling out stadiums and they'll take anyone that's got a checkbook and breath. And if you've got 40 people coming into a room, then you can vet them to make sure that they're the right fit. And we'll get some people turn up and, well, they won't turn up, but they will pay. And we'll have to go, do you know you're not the right fit? And we'll refund them and that'll be it. But we want to make sure, as you say, that the room is as or more exciting than the person up there answering the problems. Okay, so that's one of the key things. The second thing is it goes back to the thing that I said to you right at the beginning. I'm selfish. I put on events that I want to go to and hope that they excite you. So I've been to so many events, spoken on so many stages, and been so disappointed with events that I have a yearning never to waste my time again. And so I want to put on an event and I want to go into a location that I go, whoa, this is really exciting for me. Now, if I've been kicking my heels in the back of the Vatican or the Pentagon or the White House, if I'm taking it into a room that excites me, you can be pretty confident it's a pretty cool room. We did February, we did Speakeasy LA. So people literally paid $2,000. We gave them a choice of three hotels that were within the vicinity of what we were planning. And we told them to be at this location at 9 o'clock in the morning on the first day. That's it. The first location was because a lot of them wanted to talk about learning how to do a podcast. So we did the first morning focusing on audio and how to build a podcast, how to market it, how to promote it, what the best software was, the microphones, all these different things. And we did it in the Gower Studios in Los Angeles, one of the oldest studios that was built by Frank. Spreading the news, New York, New York. How can I forget that? Frank, God, what's his last name?
Sinatra.
Jeez, yeah. How do I forget that name? Yeah. So this was actually built by Frank Sinatra, and it was the actual, we were in the studio. And the studio hasn't changed much, but they joked that this was the studio that Frank built. That's where we had it. So we had technicians that were doing like Madonna videos, and they were doing Foo Fighters, and they were doing Justin Timberlake and all this, talking to you about the best microphone settings and the best resolution and upload speeds and fuzz and all these different kind of things, so that whatever you're doing, you can do. And believe it or not, people think you need expensive equipment. I've got a Shure 58 dynamic mic here that was like $60. I've got an iPhone in my ear so I can hear myself speak. And most of my videos are actually done on an iPhone because these can shoot 4K now. As long as you've got good lighting, a decent dynamic mic and a 4K video, you're good for less than $200.
Awesome. Yeah, a lot of folks think they have to have it all put together before they take action.
Oh, they absolutely do. They absolutely do. Let me tell you how my friend Avi Mizell said to me that I'm the epitome of get going and then get good. And I thought that was really cool because it made you realize that's how you had always been. You know, I always tried something, and if it worked, I'll do it again, maybe a little bit better this time. And that worked, and then again. So you do that. When I started doing my podcasts, I had the classic Yeti Blue mic, and it could pick up so much sound that a friend of mine said, you don't know the difference between mics. You need to get a dynamic mic. And he was the one that suggested this. And then someone said, oh, you need a backdrop. So I got this backdrop. Now, this backdrop looks like corrugated steel, correct?
Yes.
It's a $9.99 shower curtain. So, and it's ridiculous, but this is the stuff you put together. So I got, you know, like 68, 50, I don't know how much the thing is, you know, less than $80 for the mic, $9.99 for that thing back there, and I'm plugged into my laptop. You need to focus on the substance over the shine. And too many people are out there looking for the blue pill. They go, well, I want to do this, so I better buy this program, and I better buy this thing, and I better buy this whizzy-me-doo thing that's going to link to this, and then it'll all be good. And if that content's crap, they're not going anywhere, no matter how good the bloody mic is. So I always focus on the most impactful thing first. And then you can get better from there. You can get a better mic. You can get a better backdrop. You know, get as good as you need or better, but start off low. Don't go for the blue pill.
So I have a question that I actually am interested in, because as entrepreneurs, we have control issues and we have a hard time letting go. And in the nature of the type of business that you do, where there's NDAs involved, and really at the end of the day, you know, we'll never hear of 90% of the people, 99% of the people you actually work with. How do you choose your staff? Because I'm going to tell you, I can't pick staff like worth a shit. They usually run out the door. How do you bring in the right people to work with you?
It's probably tougher than any other element that I have in my business, getting the right people. Mm-hmm. Funny enough, I hate contracts, because contracts were designed to make lawyers rich. If I'm going to screw you over or you're going to screw me over, the contract is never going to stop that happening. It's only going to create a mess when you're in court. And so in which case, I don't have NDAs. I focus, just like I focus on the right person becoming a client, I try to focus on the right person becoming a member of my team. So I get a lot of people contacting me, and you can tell there's a lot of people that just want to go to the events, or they want to go and hang out with Elton John, or they want to be in the movies. So they're kind of like, if they get a job with me, they're going to hang out with movie stars and stuff. They'll get none of that for like 2 years. You know, I will make sure they get absolutely nowhere near anything that can embarrass or create a liability for me. You know, if I'm doing an award show, they're going to handle the parking passes and making sure the security is around their cars, and they'll never be within 20 feet of the event. So I'm very focused on making sure they earn their stripes before they get in a position that they can embarrass me.
I love that you said that, that, you know, you don't like contracts and NDAs and thing. We're similar. I have found for business that if somebody's unhappy, doesn't matter what the contract says, if they're unhappy, they're going to be a pain in your ass, right?
Yeah.
And if they're truly happy, they don't need a contract. How now that you can vet people, but you know, how do you get to that point where people, you know, keep your confidences and understand when they, you know, they work with you? Because obviously you have a reputation now, but before you had one. How did you build that quote unquote trust?
Yeah. And you create it by the exact same formula that we create all of our experience. You screw up and it goes wrong. So there were times when I would say, hey, you do this. And then I'll be watching them and I'll be like, hang on a minute, where are they going? And I'd have to jump in, or they would speak to the wrong person, or they would send out the wrong email. Now I would have to fire them, and then I would have to go and clear up the mess. And sometimes it was just a simple case of going, hey, I'm sorry about that. I had given strict instructions, but you know what staff's like. They kind of do to a point what they want to do. That person's no longer part of my group. And you've got to go in there and clean it up. But I learned how to recognize it, get the feeling of it, scope it out, get the sniff of the wrong person by sadly employing too many of those earlier on in my career. Now I have a team of 8. We work very, very well. We have very low communication with each other, maybe once every couple of weeks, and it works perfectly for us. And they're all incredibly reliable, but it does take a lot of employing the wrong people to learn how to smell the right people.
Great. Thank you. So we mentioned your book before, Blue Fishing, The Art of Making Things Happen. I apologize. I'm not holding it here because mine's on Audible.
There's mine.
Mine is on Audible. And I know that, you know, you didn't do, you kind of, again, went against the grain. You didn't do a book for a really, really, really long time. So how did you, you know, come to getting this book out? And I find it's a great resource for entrepreneurs. It's not about, hey, look how great I am and look who I worked with. It was, hey, here's how I did it and why aren't you doing the same thing? So talk a little bit about your book and what made you finally decide to write one.
So I'd been approached, again, the beauty is because of my network, I'm never far away from someone in control or someone big in the field. And a friend of mine had introduced me to a fella that knew Simon Schuster, which is one of the largest publishing houses in America. And there had been this talk of me producing a book, or they had asked me to produce a book naming names, naming stories. You know, so-and-so did this, and the king of so-and-so did this, and the queen of the Middle East did it. And I was like, if that ever came to print with my name on it, I'd be dead before cocktail hour.
Yeah, it sounded like they were trying to ruin your career.
It would ruin my career. It would absolutely ruin it. So I said, I can't do that. Thank you very much. We're not doing it.
Right.
And then, and I don't know, this has become now a little bit of a myth and a legend, but apparently someone from Simon Schuster knew an author that uses my services, a very famous author, and called them to go, hey, have you heard of this guy? And she turned around and she said, yep, he does all of that stuff. So that kind of gave me added credibility. And then they saw me on one of the stages talking to entrepreneurs. And then they went, ah, and they contacted me and they went, hey, we want to do a change here. Instead of you talking about what you do, who for, why don't we talk about how a bricklayer from London does this for the uber affluent without naming names? We would rather it was a how-to book rather than a who to. And so that made sense. It now gave me the chance to be able to go, well, hang on a minute. Most problems are actually originate from you and are actually fueled by you and your ignorance, incompetence, and your fear. I can now write a book and go, well, hang on, if a bricklayer from London's doing this with Elon Musk, you're already out of excuses. And so that's how the premise of the book became, the fact that I was able to shake things up in my voice, in my tone, and hopefully it would resonate with a dozen people. You know, I never thought this would be like a woohoo moment. I thought to myself, well, I'm going to write a book, then I'll just carry on doing what I'm doing. It didn't work that way. The book did incredibly well. It's now published in, I don't know, like 6-7 countries in different languages, or being produced in those areas. I'm now speaking on stages because of it. I'm now doing podcasts with you because of it. It's just sent me off. I'm doing speakeasy events. I'm doing private consulting. I do private phone calls. The whole thing's just erupted because of this book. But it really is, and I should thank Jay Abraham, a friend of mine, who said to me, you know, write the book that you'll never be ashamed of. And I thought to myself, well, I could write a book and name names and it would be a bestseller and everyone would kind of like go, oh, you are, yeah, but I'd be out of business. Or I could write the book that I want to write and also almost use it as a pedestal to be able to call out some bullshit, to be able to reset certain things going on in our world and hopefully make it a call to action to do things better, easier, cheaper, but more impactfully. And I'm glad to say that it did rather stonkingly well.
No, it did. And I will say from my perception from listening to that book, and I usually lately only listen to books that friends recommend or whatever, because there's just so many out there on how you should do things nowadays. And I had never heard of it. And I was doing that god awful drive from Phoenix to LA with a friend. And she's like, do you know, you got to listen to this book. And we listened to it on the drive. And I owe you a huge thank you, because you probably, you did save me the shit ton of money I was spending on a business coach telling me the wrong things for me. You know, they were doing the, what the hell's the starving dog mean? You know, that's cute, but you're never going to do anything with that. What does, you know, you aren't dressing nice enough as a female. Well, listen, I'm a redneck from Pennsylvania. I grew up in cowboy boots. I can, you know what I mean? Packing and all that. And so I'm never going to be in high heels on stage doing all that stuff, wearing a ton of makeup. I have this hair, right? I'm just at a disadvantage for this type of world. And you were the first person in that book where you're just like, you got to learn to not do what everybody else does. You don't need a niche. You need to just come across and approach these people in a way. And I love the statement of when you approach people, and you can explain to folks how you do that. You know, when you call someone, obviously you want something from them. And explain to them your approach on how you call up somebody you've never met. You obviously need something from them. And how do you, you know, offer them value and tell, would you tell them your process? Because that really helped me personally with a lot of things that we do.
Sure. It's pretty obvious. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that.
It's not.
It should be obvious that whenever anybody contacts you, they want something, even if it's just a chat. But if your kids phone you up on your phone, you know they want something. You know, they need some money, or they're going to be late home for dinner, or, you know, they're informing you, or they just want to chat, but they want to communicate something with you. And in business, if you're contacting someone, you can assume, and you can very rarely assume anything, but you can assume that they want something. That's why they're contacting you. So the key is to get that assumption out of the way very, very quickly, because people, when you contact them, they go, oh, they want something from me. What do they want? And your head starts going through all of the negative. Oh, they just want me to do something, or they just want me to write this, or they just want that to happen. It's all those kind of things. So when I contact someone, I first of all do my digging, do my research. And we spoke about this earlier. What can I bring to the party? Are they launching a book? Are they great fans of equestrian? Do they like concerts? Do they like charities? What charities? Where do their kids go to school? It can be quite eerie, the information you can find on the internet very easily for the people you're trying to reach out to. So when you reach out to them, you go, hey, my name's Steve. And there's a missing link that I'll go over with in a second. But you can go, hey, my name's Steve Sims, and I actually want you to close this museum down, or I want access into your factory, or I actually want to take people into your private collection of Ferraris next Tuesday. But before we discuss that, I'm aware you support this charity for adopted butterflies. I have an idea how we could actually raise awareness for that foundation. In fact, I have an idea how we can actually get it half funded before the next gala. You know, you start talking about what they want, and they're like, well, okay, he's just got it out of the way that he wants something. In fact, he's told me what he wants, but he's jumped straight away in for the longer question and the longer conversation on what he can bring to the table. Now, he's obviously done some digging. He knows I like that charity. All right, what are you thinking? Well, your marketing tone is wrong. I'd like to work with you on rewriting that copy so that we can reach a wider audience. You're now bringing something in there. And he can now relax, because you've already said very, very clearly, hey, I want something from you. And it's pretty obvious. That's why I called you. But I've got something for you that I want to talk about. Now, the key that I said that I missed out is I never introduced myself. Here's a game for you. So I walk up to you, I'm in a bar, you're at a bar, you're with your best mate. I walk over to you at the bar and I go, hey, how you doing? My name is Steve Sims. I know Elon Musk, Richard Branson, Elton John. I've got people married in the Vatican. I've sent them down to the Titanic. I'm a big deal. And I put my hand out to shake your hand. Now, I'm guessing, judging by the startled look on your face, you're going to spit at me, kick me in the shins. But none of that's, yeah, none of my approach to you was attractive to you, was it? In fact, if anything, it was repellent. Everything was, okay?
Yes.
Now let's twist it. Now, bear in mind, exact same situation. I walk into the bar. You're at the bar with your best mate, and I ignore you because we don't know each other. And I walk to the end of the bar, and I order my old-fashioned, okay? Your best mate taps you on the shoulder and says, hey, you see that guy over there? He knows Elton John, Elon Musk, Richard Branson. He sent people down to the Titanic. He's worked with the Pope. That guy's a big deal. Now, are you interested? Are you curious?
Absolutely.
The answer is because it came from the source that you find credible. The first one was just bragging and self-promotion, okay? And that's repellent. That's repugnant. That's horrible. But the second one, they had your respect. They were a credible source. So what I always do is whenever I want to get anything, whether it be a museum closed, a restaurant overtaken, backstage, I get someone in their sandpit that they respect to introduce me to you. So by the time I actually get to speak to them, I'm credible because Johnny's already given this little story. 99.9% of the time, whenever I actually make the phone call to the person I need to speak to after being introduced, the conversation goes something along the lines of this. Yeah, Johnny told me you did this. Did you really do that? And I go, yes, I did. Johnny told you I did. So yes, I did. And they go, oh, that's fantastic. But they start it with just something about one of the things that was mentioned that excited them. That they're like, oh, I never thought I could. Oh, yeah, this is brilliant. I heard you did that. Oh, he told me you did this. So I'm already high with credibility because of the introduction. Once you've come through a credible source and you've shown you're bringing value to the party, you are 2/3 of the way to a lifelong relationship. You've still got to nurture it. You've still got to feed it. You've still got to keep your word. You've still got to be there. But you, all the donkey word, all the hard lifting is done. You are in the door. The door's been locked, bolted, padlocked, and a chair's leaning up against it. The only one that can screw up that relationship now is you. Mm-hmm. But the heavy lifting's already been done.
That's outstanding. Though in my case, you've obviously never met any of my friends. They're kind of heathen, so I don't know that they're necessarily not a good source either. I'm kidding.
I'm going to call BS on that because you actually just proved me right in your conversation prior. You remember that your friend in the car said, you've got to listen to this.
Absolutely.
Because your friend said, you've got to listen to this. What did you do for about 4 hours in the car?
Listen to you.
Point taken. Yet if I had sent you a Facebook advert saying, hey, listen to me, I'm a big deal, how fast would that have been clicked off?
Well, quicker than Fort Fish.
There you go.
Yes.
So you've just proved my point. So I'm just trying to get the point across that for anyone out there, quite often going direct to the source is not the best way to make the initial impact. It's to find someone that you know who knows someone. And sometimes in the early stage, I would go through 12 people to go, do you know so-and-so? No, I don't, but I know that person. All right, can you make the introduction? Hey, do you know so-and-so? And you've got to validate a reason to be in every single one of those people's Rolodexes by bringing value. The amount of times I would go, hey, I hear you're a painter and decorator. Yeah, I want to speak to so-and-so, but I want to talk to you about your business at the moment. How are you doing and how can I help? You would have to help them before they would leapfrog you on to the next person. Nowadays, I'm usually one phone call away from the person that I need to contact. But in the old days, I could go through 10 or 20 people. And whatever happens is you go to the third person and they go, oh, yeah, we had a fallout. And you go, oh, shit. And you got to start again. You know, you got to go through a different route. So, you know, it's a tough thing, but it is the most impactful way to get a good introduction.
Awesome. You actually just answered the next question I was going to ask, which was how do you get to somebody a brand new person that you don't have a connection with yet, or you don't know someone, you know, that knows that person.
Well, exactly what you did. Yeah. You reach out to them. You know, you just reach, you look on Facebook, you look at who they know, you look on LinkedIn, you look at who they know. You look to see if there's any kind of pictures with them, you know, how close is the relationship, or do they just pretend they know them? And then you go to them and you say, look, you know, I want to chat with this person. And the reason I want to do that is because I've got a podcast and I want to be able to tell that story to thousands and thousands of people. Or you just give them a reason to initiate the communication, but just reach out to people within your circle to find out who's close to close to close. Now you can go direct, but if you go direct, then you really got to do your homework. You really got to know what lights that bubbles, and you've really got to be able to go in there with stonking impact, because you can't walk through the door twice.
Nice. I like that. I like that a lot. So tell folks a little bit, because we're going to wrap up pretty soon, and I appreciate you coming on and entertaining, you know, the three people that actually watch this show but every week. So because I'm a nightmare. Well, like I said, my IT guy loves it because I'm not breaking things in the office if I'm going live. Tell folks if they could take away just three things that they could do today, right now, with any level of resource they have or don't have, that will get them started to, creating real relationships as opposed to networking and getting nowhere. You know, what would that be from your, you know, from the Bluefishing perspective?
Right. So three things, maximum impact for those wonderful three people. All right. So the first thing you do is open up all of your social pages on the same browser. So your LinkedIn, your Twitter, your Facebook, your Instagram, your Tinder, whatever. Open up all your social profiles and look to see if any of them are confusing from each other. Because you look on LinkedIn and you're all there with a smart business suit trying to be intelligent, and your girl's gone wild on Facebook. So the first thing you want to do is make sure that the same tone, the same message, the same feeling of what you stand for is shown and emulated on every single one of these social networks. And I call that doing a social audit. So check all of your social to make sure that they are given the same voice, the same point of view, and the same person on every single. That's the first thing. And why? Because 9 times out of 10, people don't Google you. They social you. They will look on that Facebook. They will look on Twitter to learn a little bit more about you before they go to your Facebook to get to see what you want them to see. That's the first one, social audit. Number two, send them stuff. If there's people that you're trying to communicate with, or someone that you're trying to kind of like increase that relationship with, send them stuff. Now, I go to speeches all the time. I'll tell the authors, hey, you know, I've got a bunch of clients. Do you want me to send them one of your books? Send me a bunch of your books. Now, because, I'm on the stage with them, most of the time I'll get those books for free. And I get these books. And I will post them to my clients and I'll say, hey, I was on a stage with this guy a couple of weeks ago. He made some real good sense, but I thought I'd share the book with you. Enjoy my gift to you. It's a gift. It's a present, but it's showing that I'm thinking of them. You can literally, and this is a plug for me, doesn't really help me much, but it can very much help you. You can go on Amazon. You can order a copy of my book and you can have it sent directly to your buddy. And it's going to cost you, I think, $8. Okay. And say, hey, I heard him on a podcast. He may help you. And in doing so, you're showing that you care about someone and that getting a gift. Everybody in the planet opens up packages. Now, envelopes are what your bills come in, or maybe an invite to a wedding or whatever. But everyone opens up packages. Everyone gets excited when Amazon delivers what they know they ordered yesterday, but it's a package and you love opening it. So the euphoria of opening up a package is always good. Sending someone a book, they're excited. What's this? Who sent me this? It's a great trigger. Finally, start recording yourself. You know, we got these incredible things. Push record and go, hey, how you doing? I know we haven't spoken for a few weeks, but I wanted to be able to jump on the phone with you and text it to people. I'm a great believer in texting. Why? Because when was the last time you sent a text to someone and it ended up in that junk file? And the answer is never, because text has yet to invent a junk file. You send someone an email, it can get lost while they're in Starbucks flicking through their phone. It can end up in their junk file. Quite soon they may forget to respond, and then it gets just waylaid within all the other emails. Text is the fastest, most impactful way to get a hold of someone. There you go, three. How was that?
Awesome. Thank you. Let me ask you this real quick. With tonality, with text and emails, how, especially with some of us crasser folks, how do you get across tonality when you're texting someone who may not know your personality yet? and did not have any misunderstanding.
Yeah. So the easy answer is I don't.
Oh, okay.
If you've got that text, video, okay, you can't convey tonality in an email and text. It is impossible. So, you know, you just take what we said for 3 seconds there. You can't write that. But if you've got the video and you can go, hey, you know, we got to do this, blah, blah, there's all the excitement, there's the backdrop, there's so much more being conveyed, and no one has spelled anything wrong in a video ever. So do a short video, text it to the person, then a little video pops up on the front of that screen of you going, and they go, what's this? And so the inquisitive nature, the curiosity. And now they're going, oh, they've got an accent. Oh, that's a funny T-shirt. Oh, I see they've got a picture behind their head. They've got a shower curtain behind them. You know, all of these kind of things are stuff that cannot be conveyed in an email. You can't go, Steve Sims writing this email, sitting at his desk. It's sunny outside. The dog said, you don't do that. You just write the email. But in a video, all of that comes across.
Outstanding. Well, thank you for coming on Touch Base Tuesday. We really appreciate your time and speaking with me. This was a selfish one for me because your book really helped the direction of myself and a couple of my friends, because I've sent it up to them on Audible, in that there's just some cases where doing what they tell you, don't reinvent the wheel, but there are cases and their personality types that you can't use the same wheel as everyone else. And I think that with the blue fishing does is give folks a better insight into how they can steer, you know, their businesses that work for them and their personality type best, especially in industry where it's a very visual industry. It can be vain. It can be, you know, when you're on stages and things, it can be difficult to make your landmark. So thank you for coming on the show. Tell everybody again, SteveSimsD.com is his website. Sign up. and you have a Facebook group as well, right?
I do. Now, if they just Google Steve D. Sims on Facebook, they will find there's a business page. And when you land on that by accident, it will direct you over to the community page. But if you just go on a Facebook and type in Steve D. Sims, 1M, you'll see a little black picture with me on there, and then you'll know it's me because I'm the bald, ugly guy. And it says, welcome to the art of making things, or the art of making things happen starts here, something like that. And you just click on that and you're in.
Outstanding. Well, thank you again for coming on. Appreciate your time. You guys definitely jump over, listen to Bluefish. And if you haven't, there's no excuse. If you can't read it, listen to it in your car, you know, break it up in segments. Cause it definitely is, as far as I think, a great business tool for folks, especially folks starting out that don't have the influence yet to get to folks and all that good stuff. And I look forward to seeing you. I will sneak into one of your events at some point, I promise.
I look forward to it. I know what you look like now, so you won't be sneaking in very well. There's only 40 people there, so I'll probably recognize you.
I know. That's my brother works for Homeland Security. He's very disappointed in me because I said, hey, I need you to jump on video with some security folks. He's like, why? So they can positively ID me and shoot on site? Nope.
So, yeah, no, exactly.
Not stealth enough. But everybody reach out. We are going to actually send out the Audible version to 10 folks that watched the show today of Bluefish, and just so you guys can get going on that. And again, thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate you jumping on the show because I had no value to give you, so I appreciate you coming on.
But I had a giggle. That's what I wanted. I wanted to see if this was going to be fun. And I can't believe the time that we've been on. You know, I actually have to go. So I will see you soon.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye.